So today is the Lunar Observance Day, or One Pra in Thai, and it's the what they call the big One Pra, meaning it's the new moon today. So it's a day where we undertake the precepts, sila, or virtue. So we set our hearts on undertaking the five precepts, or the eight precepts. And this virtue, the sila, we can make the commitment to undertake from a monastic. The monastic is the one who gives the precepts, bears witness to one's undertaking of the precepts. But if we know about virtue, if we know about the precepts already, we can make the commitment to undertake them on our own. We can have that intention, whether we're at home or at the monastery or wherever we are. So today being the Lunar Observance Day, we can undertake the eight precepts, just like Mahajanaka, one of the past lives of the Buddha. He was traveling by boat from one city to another, and then he knew it was the Uposatha day, the lunar day. And so he undertook the precepts, the Uposatha sila. Then the boat got into an accident broke down, destroyed. And then through his quality of effort, he was able to survive. Through his merit and parami, he was able to make it to the shore and survive. So we can undertake these precepts on our own. So Venerable Ajahn is just explaining the words in Pali for undertaking the precepts on one's own or with a monastic. So sampatha wira is kundiyo, is to do it on one's own. So one sets the intention and one does that on one's own without needing a monastic or a witness. Mujeta wirat, which is, for instance, in the case of a stream enter, they have the five precepts as a normal quality in their heart at all times. So they don't need to undertake it or make an outer commitment in that way, because it's already been established as a baseline or normal quality in their mind to have the five precepts. We can have the opportunity to listen to the Dhamma, and so we set our minds to make the mind peaceful.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Ito parang sakka.
So now we have the opportunity to listen to the Dhamma, to give rise to wisdom. To give rise to wisdom on the path of Dhamma, which is to know and see clearly the truth of the way things are, to see that it's normal and natural, to see normality. We see that the mind clings to this body, clings to this material form, mental phenomena, as me and mine, as self. And it's normal for the mind that lacks understanding to behave in this way. But this very behavior is the cause for suffering to arise. Because we see that the mind that has craving and attachment gives rise to suffering. So we walk the path of virtue, collectedness, and wisdom in order to put an end to the defilements, to give rise to cessation, to nibbana. And to do this, we have to train and practice first. So this training in mental cultivation and meditation is very important. And why is this? Well, we see that all sankharas, conditioned formations, are unstable, uncertain. We can't trust them, can't rely on them. So these conditioned formations, they proliferate, they arise and cease. And these conditioned formations, we're never sure how long they will last. In fact, it's degrading with each and every in and out breath. It's constantly disintegrating and degrading. Ever since birth, these bodies are degrading, disintegrating, falling apart. Sometimes we feel that we don't want old age, sickness, and death, but we want birth. But having birth, then we must have old age, sickness, and death together with it. They come as a pair. So Venerable Ajahn Chah would speak in terms of wisdom about this. He's saying, if we cry, if we feel sad at the loss of a loved person, then why don't we cry when they're born? When they're born, usually we feel happy because the mind is lost or deluded already. But we realize, or we see that birth, it comes with many other things. Specifically, it comes with old age, sickness, and death. We can reflect on the last teaching, the last words of the Buddha, that to all the practitioners, to establish your minds in heedfulness, not to be heedless, because change is the nature of all conditioned things. So we see that the fully self-awakened Buddha was an arahant, completely awakened, as the highest level of spiritual virtue, the highest level of parami, and had great psychic power, great special abilities. But the conditioned formations, that's another story. This material form mentality, its nature is just like this, that it must degrade and pass away. There's no way for it to be otherwise. Similarly, with the foremost, or the right hand and left hand great disciples of the Buddha, foremost in wisdom, foremost in psychic power, they had truly great wisdom, great psychic power, but their bodies, their conditioned formations, also had to pass away, degrade. So over 2,500 years ago, they entered final Nibbana. And for all the other great disciples, it's the same as well. And also the great masters of the present day, they can have great ability, great skill, great knowledge. But these conditioned formations, these sankharas, they simply can't last forever. There was one great master, Khubha Ajahn, who reached the age of 126 years, so he had a long life. But however it is, at the end it has to pass away, degrade. This degradation, passing away of the sankharas, it's the nature of these bodily cells, that they have this nature to divide from one cell to two, to four, to eight, to 16, and it keeps going like this to be millions upon millions of cells. But these cells require food, require oxygen to nourish them. If the cells don't have any oxygen, then the cells degrade and fall apart right there. So if we're not careful in the way that we live our lives, careful in terms of what we eat, or if our body doesn't get enough rest, then it degrades even more quickly. So whether the body degrades quickly or more slowly, it's up to the way we conduct our lives. But the body doesn't know about this. So this is regarding bodily health. So we seek to rest sufficiently, to eat right, to eat well, to exercise enough. And an important aspect is that the mind should not be too tight or too tense with regard to all things in life. For instance, the seeking out of wealth, the mind shouldn't be too tight or tense. Make it not too much. Because we see that in the world, beings seek out wealth. And having sought out wealth already, then in one's old age, one uses that wealth to care for the body. But in whatever case, the body must degrade and pass away. So don't do it too much. Because we see that the world is not intelligent, that the Buddha taught to seek out the Dhamma, and that this is better. So we seek out purity. And we, in terms of living our life and engaging in a livelihood, we try to make it just right. Having been born, many beings wish for wealth. And sometimes beings just want a lot of wealth. They want a lot of gain in the world. And if one does get this, never mind about that, it's okay. Just make sure that it's obtained correctly in terms of virtue. But in whatever case, however much we gain, what we lose is time. So we seek out wealth, or beings gain wealth, but we lose time, because time simply never stops. Time never ceases. With every in and out breath, our life in this world grows shorter. Every breath we take in and out is one fewer breath we have left. So sitting here listening to the Dhamma, then our life grows ever shorter. So we contemplate like this in order to be heedful, not to be heedless. We know that we must die, that death is for certain. And before we die, we seek to use this body to build merit and goodness. So one way to build merit and goodness is to give, to practice generosity, to give donations, to help the poor, to help hospitals, to donate equipment to hospitals. So we think about the lives of beings, that this body is full of disease, that we don't know when it'll fall apart. And so people suffer over this, and people have many different diseases and go to the hospital. So this giving of equipment to the hospital brings great benefit. For instance, it could be a medical machine that costs maybe 500,000 baht, and the nurses say that they need this equipment. Then the person giving gives even actually two of these machines, and this brings truly great benefit to many people. Because having a body, then one thinks in terms of loving kindness for oneself and others. And one seeks to help those that have difficulty, that have suffering, according to our capacity, according to our energy. We do what we can. And we also recollect that in this world that all of us have merit and goodness. Even if it's just a little bit of merit and goodness, we can rejoice. We can anumodana with that. Having been born already like this, we all have merit. So we can satu and anumodana, we can rejoice with this. And to abandon jealousy. Because if the mind has jealousy, then this jealousy simply makes the mind lower. It brings the mind to lower states, lower status, lower positions. The mind with jealousy leads to rebirth in lower places in society. So we see that this quality of mudita, of sympathetic joy, brings great benefit. Having mudita leads one to have birth in a high position or a high place in society, high status. So this quality of mudita, sympathetic joy, it's seeing goodness, seeing merit, and giving one's blessing, feeling happy with the goodness and good fortune, the merit of others. So this leads to high places in society. And we also see others that have a high status or good position, good fortune. We rejoice, we feel happy with them. And this leads to birth in high positions and high status. And this is because the mind is already in a high place. So the mind goes to a high place first because it's not jealous. So even if it's just a little bit of merit, we can rejoice, anamodana and satu. And we can rejoice with everyone all over the world like this. We can also rejoice with the devas who have merit and goodness, with the Brahma gods who have merit and goodness. So we sincerely satu and anamodana with them. We rejoice, feel happy with their good fortune. Like all of us here, we're gathered together to practice, to listen to the Dhamma before today and today as well. And so with everyone gathered and with all beings all over the world, we can satu anamodana to cultivate this heart of mudita, the heart of sympathetic joy. And this is a heart that's soft and gentle, because we see that the defilements is something hard, something rough. It's not soft at all. And so with this heart of mudita, there's this sense of gentleness, of trust. We're not fighting with anyone. Because we see that this quality of jealousy, if we perceive the good fortune in others, then we wish for that to reduce. We wish to destroy their happiness, or one wishes for their others' wealth or status to go away. So this is simply the nature of the defilements to think like this. It's normal in the world. We see it's up to each individual mind. But so we train the mind in the four Brahmaviharas of loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity, these four divine abidings. So we have loving kindness for one another. Because we see that all beings want love and need love. All beings are like this. And so we help each other to not suffer. If we have a lot of wealth, then we share that. We share, and then this external wealth then becomes a wealth in the heart. So we give on the external level according to our ability. Then this becomes a wealth inside the heart, inside the mind. So this is the activity or behavior of one with wisdom. We have this wish to do goodness and merit, to practice generosity and virtue. We can undertake the precepts on our own, and we can feel pride that we're observing the precepts, observing virtue. So on any given lunar observance day, Posaja day, we can feel this pride that we're observing the five precepts or the eight precepts. We see that the benefit of the precepts is greater than that of generosity, because observing virtue, it's more difficult than practicing generosity. We see that having generosity and virtue already, it brings the benefit of happiness. As happiness arises, we have wisdom. We see that some beings are lost in the sense of self, clinging to self, and they do acts of demerit or unwholesome actions. And so we give forgiveness. We don't make the situation worse. We see that this mind that's lost in defilement, no one wants to be like that. But these qualities of greed, clinging, jealousy, possessiveness, anger, ill will, delusion, confusion, clinging to everything as self. This is the nature of the mind that's lost. So this is the mind that's lost in self, and it hurts others, can disrupt or hurt one's own family or the government, one's friends, companions. When anger arises, the mind can change very quickly. So we need to be careful. We need to have mindfulness. We need to have wisdom so that we don't make the situation worse. We see that that in the world we try to cultivate a mind like a mother and father towards their child, because we see that it's normal for a mother and father, when their child does something bad, does some kind of bad action, that the mother and father have the Brahmaviharas with regard to their child. The mother and father have loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity. So we see that the mother and father are the Brahma God for their child. The mother and father are able to give forgiveness and give loving kindness to the child. This is something quite difficult to find. We can consider who really has a mind like this in the world. So that we recollect this love that parents have for their child, and we develop loving kindness in our own hearts in the same way. We develop loving kindness just in the same way as if we had a child in our womb, just like a mother has loving kindness for the child in her womb, so we develop loving kindness as well. This is truly the divine abiding of loving kindness. So we make effort to cultivate these divine abidings all the time of metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha. Then whatever meditation object we use, then these Brahmaviharas help that meditation object not to degrade. And we contemplate that life must end in death, that with each in and out breath, life grows shorter. And so therefore we have loving kindness and compassion, seeing that we all must die, that we might die today, and therefore we set our heart not to fall into anger, not to fall into ill will, but to have sympathetic joy for all beings, not to wish harm on any being at all. Because we see that life is just this much, that it must end in death, that we have this love or attachment for conditioned formations, but they must degrade and fall apart. Just like sometimes if the heat element in the body starts to go out of control, and the heat in the body is lost, and the body becomes cool, then bacteria start to digest the body. And then one takes the body and cremates it, then that body becomes dispersed in the air, becomes ash that goes into the dirt and the ground. And so we see these four natural elements of earth, air, fire, and water return to the earth, or return to nature. So we contemplate death in this way. And so therefore we use the body while it's still alive to do goodness and merit, to practice generosity, virtue, and meditation, to practice Dhamma, to listen to Dhamma, to grow in Dhamma. In this way we can receive the benefits of virtue, generosity, which is happiness. This gives rise to heavenly happiness. But even this happiness of the heavens has suffering as well. It's not only happiness. So we see that we come practice Dhamma, we undertake the eight precepts sometimes, like on the lunar observance days, and we practice meditation. And when we bring the mind to peace, to samadhi, and once the mind has the strength and energy of samadhi, wisdom is ready to arise. And we see the Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths. What is suffering like? So one has faith, Let's practice generosity to the fullest extent already. To use wealth in one's life, to share with one's relatives, family, to make parami and merit with that wealth. And one has a lot of faith. So this is really worth rejoicing in. And so one has a mind, or one trains the mind as well. The mind becomes beautiful. So we're able to bring the mind to the state of a heavenly being, of a deva. And once the mind's in a heavenly state, then we feel this wish to practice generosity, to make merit. So this is strong faith. And we practice meditation to give rise to wisdom. We have generosity established as a normal quality in the mind. We have a firm establishment in virtue. We're firmly committed to our meditation practice. Then we see the suffering in the cycle of birth and death. In samsara, we see that life is uncertain. We don't wish for this, but we still meet with old age, sickness, and death. So therefore we practice meditation, because having generosity and virtue already, we still suffer. We can still have jealousy, have competitiveness. So we see that these defilements give us suffering, these kilesas give us suffering, giving rise to the sense of self, to personality view, sakkaya ditti. This clinging to me and mine. This gives rise to heat and agitation, to this fighting and fire in the mind. So we meditate, we undertake virtue. We can do that for a day. It's like becoming a monastic for a day. And so on the lunar observance day, we come to give alms, to practice virtue, to meditate. Because we see that even giving a single morsel of food or a single bottle of water, it's not easy to come by these things. So even the giving of a single morsel or single drink of water, it's something really worth rejoicing in, sattu and anamodana. Because we see that for this to come about, the Buddha had to sacrifice countless lifetimes, to sacrifice his own blood and flesh in order for this to come about. We see that the lay supporters have faith because of the Buddha, because of the Buddha's great effort and great cultivation, because of the Dhamma, because of the great members of the Sangha, all the way from the time of the Buddha to the present day, Venerable Ajahn Mun, Venerable Ajahn Chah, all the great arahants. And so for this faith in the Buddha's dispensation to arise, it's truly something that's not easy to come by at all. And so we sattu anamodana, we rejoice, give rise to this mind of rejoicing, and the mind becomes joyful and peaceful. So seeing this, then we abandon jealousy. We don't make the situation worse than it already is, but instead we bring the mind to stillness and peace. And we see that the Buddha taught those that had full parami. For instance, Venerable Yasa or Natapindika. So he taught them generosity, virtue, and meditation, and taught them the Four Noble Truths, taught them about suffering, about the pain and stress of the body and mind, being separated from the loved, association with the unloved, that this is all suffering. When we're with someone that we like, we feel happy and at ease, but then we're with someone that we don't like and we feel ill at ease, we feel stress. So we see that birth is dukkha. Old age, sickness, and death are dukkha. And this sickness, we can also say pain, discomfort, it's normal and natural. Like we might get some knee pain, but then the knee gets worse and worse and it hurts to the point where we really just can't take it anymore. And sometimes we even get a knee replacement surgery because the pain is so great. And so we practice giving to those in suffering, give and help those that are sick. And we see that sometimes the pain in the body becomes so great that the doctor gives morphine or injects morphine into the patient because the pain is just so much that one can't take it anymore. And it can reach the point where the heart gives out, the heart ceases functioning. So this is what it's like when the physical form has sickness and pain. And sometimes we're able to cure it, and sometimes not. Either way, it ends in death, that the energy of the heat element disperses. And sometimes we might feel very hot before this happens. Like this can happen to some practitioners. For instance, there is the mother of one of my disciples, Ajahn Sah. I advised his mother to chant it to be so 84,000 times. And she was quite diligent in this. She chanted all day. Even if her throat got dry, she would just keep chanting. And so she actually chanted it to be so 84,000 times in two rounds of 84,000. And so normally she wouldn't look so bright, but after she had chanted these two rounds of 84,000 praises to the Buddha, she looked very radiant and bright and light. So this is the benefit of chanting the qualities of the fully self-awakened Buddha brings about truly great benefit, makes the mind beautiful. And so for this mother of Ajahn Sah, she felt the heat in her body get more and more. She's feeling quite hot, and she knew that she was beginning the process of dying. But her mind felt very much at ease. She had joy and happiness, this fullness of heart. It's like her mind was already in heaven, in a happy state. So thinking of this, we can recollect how the Buddha taught Venerable Yasa to see dukkha, to understand dukkha, to see the suffering in birth, old age, sickness, and death. In this way, one is able to abandon attachment, to abandon the sense of self. So hearing this, Venerable Yasa, his mind collected. He saw the truth. He realized stream entry. So this was just the first time he had listened to the Dhamma. He realized stream entry on that occasion. Then his mother and father came looking for him. And Venerable Yasa was in the Isipatana with the Buddha. And the Buddha exercised his psychic powers so that when Venerable Yasa's mother and father arrived, they couldn't see their son sitting there. And the Buddha took that opportunity to teach the mother and father. And both the mother and father on that occasion also realized stream entry. And listening to the Dhamma, that same talk, Venerable Yasa realized arahantship. And the mother and father wanted Venerable Yasa to go back home with them, but he couldn't go back anymore because he was an arahant already. And the mother and father, being stream enterers, they were able to see this in their son, that he had this brightness, this fullness, this happiness, radiant like the full moon. Because we see that this happiness It affects the physical body. It's a quality in the mind, this joy, this happiness. And it affects the elements in the body, like the blood, and makes the body look bright and radiant. So one who has attained to the Dhamma is like this. So we see that it's just like ourselves, that in these past lives of Venerable Vyasa, practice giving, virtue, meditation, and for many lifetimes. So for ourselves, however many lifetimes we've practiced already, we do it again in the present, because we don't know when our parami will be full, when our parami or spiritual virtues will be ready. And we never know in whatever lifetime or in a given lifetime we can attain quickly, like Venerable Vyasa. But whatever the case is, we practice in the present, and we do this to the fullest of our ability. We make a full effort. Because in this life, we have birth, old age, sickness, and death. And how long will we be here? Because if we look with the eyes of wisdom, we see that we're all running towards old age, sickness, and death, that all of us are. We see that our body is running towards degradation, running towards disintegration and falling apart, that all lives are running towards death. And having died, we can't take anything with us. So therefore, we seek out the Dhamma. Just like the youngest brother of Venerable Sariputta, named Revata. So his mother and father, seeing that all their children had ordained already, they wanted their youngest son to get married first. So they arranged for him to marry at a young age. And a elderly woman came to give Revata a blessing for long life, a blessing for his marriage. And Revata, seeing this old person, seeing the signs of aging, like the broken teeth, the aged, wrinkled skin, the bent over back, and he felt, oh, I really don't want this old age. I don't want old age, sickness, and death. He just felt like that was too much. So he went to seek out wisdom instead. So he ran away and ordained. Then in no long time, he realized arahantship because he had a great amount of parami. So we contemplate life as uncertain, and we use our life to build merit and parami. So we study to give rise to knowledge. And we see that all of us want to understand, well, what is stream entry like? Like for myself, when I was, before I ordained, I thought, oh, this stream entry sounds really good, that you don't get reborn in lower states anymore. Because these states of suffering, these lower realms, there's a great deal of dukkha, great deal of suffering, like the animal realm, the asura realm, the hungry ghost realm, the hell realm. It's nothing but suffering. It's a lot of suffering. So we listen to this, we understand it, and so we endeavor to practice. Then one day we're able to see clearly. So we keep practicing, keep practicing. One day we're able to know clearly and dispel all our doubts, to see that it's not me, not mine, not you or yours, not self. In this way the mind becomes bright and radiant. We see the Dhamma. So all the way from the Buddha's time up until today, it's the same. We can see it just the same in the present. Just like some Sangha, they meditate, can see a leaf fall and see that our lives are just the same as this falling leaf. That there's this suffering in the mind and the heart. Having experienced suffering, one sees the leaf fall and realizes that life must end in death. The mind sees the Dhamma. And if one has a lot of samadhi, one can even attain to the Dhamma in that moment. So today being the seventh day of our retreat together, may you be intent, may you set your heart on this practice, but may you be intent in a way that's just right. Don't be intent to the point where you feel stressed out or tight. So we listen to the Dhamma, give rise to wisdom, our doubts are dispelled, the mind becomes bright and radiant. And so we practice like this, so the mind goes to brightness, to radiance, to peace, to nibbana, to emptiness, seeing all conditioned formations, all rupa, nama, materiality and mentality as empty. We see that everything in this world, everything we experience, it's all temporary. It has no true essence. It's all empty by nature. There's nothing there. So we see emptiness. We see that emptiness is Buddha. The mind is empty. So we see the mind that is clinging and attached. It's a mind with suffering. The mind that lets go, the mind that puts these things down, is Buddha. So we walk this path of sila, samadhi, panya, virtue, collectedness, and wisdom. And we bring the mind to emptiness, to freedom from all clinging. So we do this one step at a time, gradually, bit by bit. This is something we're able to do. So may you all set your hearts on this, and may you all grow in blessings.